Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
It's Shake Them Ropes. My name is Chris Dovambrino. I am back after reading some Marcus Aurelius and attempting to recenter myself, finding a point of stoicism, a calm acceptance. And with me to shatter all of that is Jeff Hawkins. Hi, Jeff.
I've been watching Gino Hernandez and Tully Blanchard. So
we all practice stoicism in our separate ways.
Yeah. I watched the Viceland doc and I was like, well, it's okay. And then I decided I have all this old wrestling I've yet to break out. I have some Southwestern DVDs just watching Gino and Tully. And I'm like, can you get a combination of two more unlikable people naturally to form a tag team? It's pretty cool stuff to watch. You know, Tully's kind of still in his infancy trying to find himself. And Gino isn't exactly smooth, but you can see it. You can see the brattiness in both of them, and it's endearing for me because I like those kinds of characters.
So, first and foremost, we have the cleanup section before we get into NXT here. My little bit of cleanup is, since the Tuesday-Wednesday show that we taped and dropped, I have received absolutely no arguments from anybody who listens to this show to keep us reviewing Raw and SmackDown, Jeff. Not a one. Have you?
Well, I think it's one of those, well, as long as one of you is watching this show.
I nominate you. Cool. Second.
Thanks. In. Appreciate that.
Cats. Oh, wow. They all voted for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they know I'm the one that's going to get the most upset about it.
And I guess apparently I'm on the hook now to start guessing the plot of Raw and SmackDown. We'll have to figure out rules for this.
No, I'll tell you what happened. There was an episode. I went to my folks' house in Phoenix for Christmas, and so I didn't get a chance to watch the Raw or something like that. And Rob goes, no, this is a great opportunity. So he laid out, okay, this is the segment that happened. What do you think the result was? And I'd have to guess the booking, and apparently I got most of them correct in that it was very predictable once the situation was laid out.
Well, I mean, maybe we'll bring that back here on Shake the Ropes when we do the Thursday-Friday show. Maybe.
So, cleanup. Some listeners also did notice that on our NXT rundown last week, we forgot to review the debut of Kushida.
Oh, yeah, Kushida. We had a sentence for him. Was that not enough for people?
Yeah, well it violates the rules of a debut for me. I want a guy to come in strong. I want you to tell me what his moves were so I know what to root for. And I just want him to kill a guy. That's all I want to happen in a debut for anybody. Have a guy, make a statement, I'm here, I'm great, and here's what you need to know about me. If I have a certain worry that the blown landing on the electrical chair spot or the electric chair spot might have soured someone, I do. I have a concern about that.
Really? That quick, huh?
Well, it's one of those things like, well, we just got rid of a Tommy.
That's what I'd be more worried about, is that Kushida has thin ice because of the failure to launch of a Tommy, and you kind of see where Tozawa is, and I'd call him a quote-unquote success story.
Well, we don't do well with non-English-speaking talent, so it's one of those things where you bring these guys in who are great wrestlers, and again, they don't know what to do with great wrestlers. They know what to do with people with a hook, with a marketing hook to them. So everything will be ethnic about Kushida.
And they're not going to do the time traveling angle with him. So this guy's stuck with the shell of a character from New Japan that really means nothing to anyone who doesn't know his New Japan work.
Right. And the NXT audience, you know, they knew who Kushida was.
Sure.
But they didn't know it, but they didn't know his signature spots, and it showed in this match.
And yeah, again, knowing who Kushida is and knowing who Kushida's character in NXT is are two different things.
Yes.
And I just think sometimes the writing on the NXT level when they're, you know, debuting these people, they just think, well, Shinsuke Nakamura will be able to get by being Shinsuke Nakamura. And
right.
You actually need more than just that.
Yeah, and what the WWE does in their system is they look at a guy and they go, well, what does Vince think of him? Okay, that's his marketing hook. So Nakamura is this eccentric guy in a Michael Jackson outfit. You know, so I mean, I think it was like 3 weeks he was the eccentric Nakamura. And so that's what you get out of him, you know. What is this guy? Oh, he's, if he looked at Kushida, what would he say? He's the Japanese.
He's a bulldog.
Dynamo. Yeah, you know, whatever. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah. No, I worry about Kushida, and I just worry about where his place is on this roster. Although it's a good thing that they have the North American title, because I could see Kushida getting slid into that title hunt at some point.
Yeah, definitely.
So, shall we begin with 205 Live? Because I think we can get by it relatively quickly here.
Chris, every week there's someone who ends up by accident doing double duty on two of these shows.
This week was Noam Dar's week.
And you know what? I could not be happier that Noam Dar's knee injury was not as bad as once thought.
Me too. I was really worried about that. And
now, don't get me wrong. Noam Dar does very little for me in terms of wanting to watch him do matches.
Yeah, you cut me off on the second part of that because the end was going to be. And I am not a huge Noam Dar fan, but I do wish him well, and it was good to see him get a nice warm reception in Scotland, too. He needs that. He needed that.
Well, next week, I guess, the main roster is over in the United Kingdom, and so all the tapings will be about that. So I'm fairly certain Noam Dar will be on one of these shows. Ligero's going to be on 205 Live. I know you're very excited about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I hope someone grabs his horns.
Yeah, I was intrigued by the fact that the Singh brothers got a squash win the week after they lose a match to the Lucha.
Well, you're just going to gloss over the fact that Ric Fuller has two children in wrestling now?
You need to explain who Ric Fuller is.
All right, kids, gather around. So, back when young Novi was a kid, there was a man, a little bit of a legend, who'd show up on WCW Saturday night and also the first hour of WCW Monday Nitro, and he would fight people like Lex Luger, people like Sting, people like the laughing man Hugh Morris, people like Goldberg. This man got in the ring with some of your favorites from WCW back in the day. And did he beat a single one of them? No, no, my friends. But he had a unitard. He had ridiculous hair. He had a beard. He was Ric Fuller. And he was one of my favorite jobbers.
Now, did Ric Fuller, he fought Hugh Morris, but did he actually put up offense against Hugh G. Rection?
Ooh, I don't know. I don't know. But if you were looking for the poor man's answer to Gary Albright, in the 1990s, you needed to look no further than Ric Fuller.
No, it's an odd move. I like it because I think the Singh brothers need some, you know, after being paired with
it was just odd beat. You know, after being paired with former champion of the main roster on SmackDown, Jinder Mahal. Thank you very much. No, I think the Bollywood boys really needed to be kind of rebuilt. The Singh brothers, who are kind of working in between the Bollywood boys and the Singh brothers at this point, we need to see what they're going to be about on this brand, and I think that this was a fine match. It's just a weird beat. It's like what happened last week should have happened this week, and what happened this week should have happened last week. And if you did that, it would have been totally fine.
Chris, we need to explore what is my mental block about not being able to remember Jinder Mahal's name.
I don't think it's really all that hard. You're just trying to forget that for months on end, WWE tried to inflict Jinder Mahal on all of us and convince us that that guy was a top-of-the-card guy.
This is like 3 weeks in a row where I blanked on Jinder Mahal's name. I don't understand it. I think now it's become a
Look,
part of my
subconscious. Look, you are trying to hinder Jinder. I think that's pretty clear.
Arya Daivari beat Noam Dar, as previously stated. I am...
No, you know who lost hard, though, in this match was Tony Nese versus The Microphone. The Microphone just kicked his ass for what seemed like an eternity, and I was like, stop. Tony's already dead, and The Microphone just kept coming at him, and he just couldn't handle it.
He's coming off as too aw shucks.
He doesn't know his character at all.
No.
This guy is a guy who is having to think every single time before he speaks. And he went three sides of a two-sided issue on Arya Daivari. Arya Daivari hasn't done anything. Well, I'm not trying to take away from the things that Arya Daivari's done, but he also hasn't done anything. He sounded so stupid all throughout this match. And the commentary team was doing their damnedest to help Tony Nese out with loaded questions, setup questions that have obvious answers. And Tony, oh, they just elude him. They just
elude him. It was, you know, I just, the one that stuck out with me was like, literally, Vic is grasping for straws. So he goes, How did it feel to win in your hometown? Oh, man, it felt great, and especially in my hometown. And I was just like, you're just repeating the stuff he's feeding you back to him. Now, I'll give one positive. I liked when Arya would come out and, you know, confront him, and it didn't break down into a fight. And Nese is saying, look, you need to concentrate on your match, not on me. I liked that. And I liked the end.
The wraparound was good. The whole thing of I could have attacked you at any point throughout this match, and that's the whole reason I was out there. That's great. I love that. The problem is, you know, we didn't want him in the goober chair sitting outside the ring. We talked about how bad that looked optically. And then we put him on the microphone, and that was somehow worse. So this guy, look, I like Tony. I think he's a gifted wrestler, but, man, things are not clicking with this title reign at all.
No, and on a show that needs personality, the guy on top needs to have a lot of it, I think.
You know what I think that they've done that is interesting on this show, and I think it's a real mark in the positive column, is they have set up two credible challengers for whoever comes out of this title match coming up at Money in the Bank. Because we now have Tozawa heated up, and we now have Arya Daivari heated up.
Well, we also have Humberto Carrillo.
And Carrillo heated up, too. Yeah, right. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, we have different things that you know, that are positives here. And the wrestling is still very good on this show.
Yeah, right? Sure.
I mean, you know, I really liked the Tozawa match.
I really did. Oh, man. There were some really great spots in that. The part where they were scrumming before they went through the double table, that was great, and the double table spot was awesome. The senton with the chair, awesome. Great selling by Mike Kanellis. This is a good match, you know.
Yeah,
and the crowd got into it, too. It's not even, this is a good match, and the crowd wasn't really into it. They are into it. These people are, frankly, probably a little bit starved for some good wrestling.
Well, I think the people were into it as soon as a table got brought out.
Sure.
Yeah, Mike Kanellis, you know, he had a good match. My issue with Mike is he's not setting the world on fire with his personality on this show.
And neither is Maria. They just don't have a real interesting character
That's
going
the
on
weird
right now.
Thing. That's the weird one, because I know Maria has personality, and she's shown it many times. This
act could have personality, right? They just don't. I will say another positive in this column was the opening promos from everybody. I think the Brian Kendrick, his pairing with Tozawa, it's really good. I think that, you know, Tozawa is actually plenty good at speaking and doing his own promos, but the Brian Kendrick has added a nice little wrinkle into Tozawa's character that I think is good.
I don't care how many times he does it. I don't care if it's a trope. the mean mugging that turns into the big crap-eating grin, I will mark for that every time.
Yeah, no, it's very funny. I like it a lot. So, shall we move over to NXT UK?
Sure.
Alrighty. So, this week, we began with Mustache Mountain, defeating The Hunt. Yeah. In a match that was really kind of a tragedy that went over nearly 7 minutes and 30 seconds.
Shake Them Ropes, official mascots, Wild Boar Mike Hitchman, and the Primate. What's his? They've dropped their name.
Jay Melrose is his name. Right. I'm pretty sure I didn't catch it, but I'm pretty sure somewhere along the way, Mustache Mountain cheated.
I liked this for what it was. Look, I view The Hunt in the same vein as I view my love of the New Zealand Militia. Jack Victory and Rip Morgan. They're that mid-card geek team that I just love for some unexplainable reason.
No, but these guys are also good wrestlers. Like, these guys are good brawling wrestlers. I love the Primates, like, floor slap clothesline, that Donkey Kong-style clothesline. I'm into all of that. I think they've got great fight. I just love the way that Melrose waylays on people. And I'm realistic about where these guys should be sitting on the card. However, I will also say that I have some intrigue in The Hunt scaring the shit out of the grizzled young veterans.
Yeah, I had some intrigue about that, too. I like that they gave The Hunt some offense here, especially in the second half of the match.
Yeah.
I really was enjoying their offense. There was a part of me, and I know this sounds absolutely stupid, but when the grizzled young veterans came out there and they had injured Amir Jordan, I wanted The Hunt to answer the call. I really did. Trying to make up for their loss. I wish they hadn't played up the winning streak thing with The Hunt, because it just reminds you that they're never going to get more than 2 wins in a row.
Yeah, and this would have actually been kind of a good victory for them to pick up. And you could have done it in a way that protected Mustache Mountain. That's one of the nice things.
I'm not going to go that far.
I want them heated up, and whereas I don't have a lot of intrigue in a revisitation of Mustache Mountain versus the Grizzled Young Veterans at this time, The Hunt versus the Grizzled Young Veterans is new. So I do actually see a play strategically for them to pick up the victory to get them in line to be title contenders.
Well, for me, you don't put them up against Mustache Mountain.
That's
all.
Also true. I wouldn't have done this.
Too far over. I'd want a couple more weeks of either squash matches,
and then I'd get to Mustache Mountain,
or I'd have them beat Jordan and Williams.
Yeah. Actually, I would have had them do the angle. I would have had them be the ones who beat up. Yeah, Williams and Jordan.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Look, I'm always going to be a big Hitchman fan. I thought he did some good stuff in there. I like The Hunt. I this tag team division isn't exactly stacked, so, you know, you can rebuild them. I just think it was a little bit too soon to, you know.
Knock them down.
You're playing up. They've had 2 strong wins in 2 weeks, or 2 wins in a row. Mustache Mountain is just too powerful to put them up against right now to have them. You can build up to the Mustache Mountain match. So.
No, who they should have been up against this week is an oddball team of 2 mid-carders.
Yeah, or you could do, you could always throw in Webster and Mandrews.
But I was even something like Mark Andrews and some other guy on the roster. You know what I'm saying? Some other mid-cardy dude.
Joseph Connor and somebody.
Yeah. Actually, that's perfect. Joseph Connor and you could even have the oddball tag team like Joseph Connor and Mark Andrews, where they don't really get along, and that leads to Mark Andrews getting sacrificed to The Hunt.
Right.
So, something like that. We have a qualifying match for a number one contender's fatal four-way between Joe Coffey and Flash Morgan Webster. Joe Coffey, way, way over. Flash Morgan Webster, basically the heel here. I liked Flash Morgan Webster showing some swag. I would have liked him to even play further into the heelishness for the purposes of this match.
Yeah, because they were getting the hometown pop for Gallus here.
Yeah, right. And Webster's character, that Modfather thing, you know, he's a little bit of a punk. And a punk revels in being the villain, even when you're not a bad person. But if people are going to go ahead and hate you anyways, a punk's mentality is, okay, I welcome your hatred. Come on, bring it on, baby.
I understand the logic behind a Fatal 4-Way in that you want to get title contenders in there, but you only want to pin one of them. But you can always throw in an extra match and actually have a contender. It makes no logical sense to do a Fatal 4-Way when you could just have a tournament.
Yeah, tourney it. They overthink these things sometimes, and especially these multi-man like Fatal 4-Ways or whatever. When they're for like a number one contender spot, they're always okay matches, but I don't know, man. There's just something
to be
said.
Action.
I know.
It's trying to keep, you know, the fans into it. But, you know, I mean, Joe Coffey is a guy who you beat him and then you rebuild him up and then you beat him again. So, I mean, I'm fine with him winning here. And they're not ever going to put the main belt on a guy like the Mod Father. You know, he's more in line for a secondary title or a light heavy or a, you know, like a 205 title, but
yeah, or the tag titles at some point. Yeah, they introduced, yeah, like the UK tag titles, that sort of thing. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Then after that we had a promo in the ring. This kind of parallels a little bit what happens on NXT too. Not quite the same thing, obviously. A little dynamic difference between Gallus and the Undisputed Era, but we do see just a little scotch of tension between, see what I did there, between Joe Coffey and Wolfgang. When Wolfgang starts talking about Walter, Dave Mastiff, and Joe Coffey's like, no, Joe Show, this is my kingdom.
Yeah, I guess, they need to do something with Wolfgang. He's been around, and in this galaxy, he's always been kind of the third wheel.
I think that they are starting to illustrate that you have the brothers, and then you have Wolfie. And in this pyramid right now, Wolfie is the bottom block.
Yeah, and I could see Wolfgang getting beaten down by the Coffees, and then a guy like I want to call him Emo so bad. What's his name in the kid from Sanity?
Oh God. Not Emo. The hairy one, right?
Yeah, the hairy one. Well, that was his name on the indies, was Emo.
Oh, I thought it was the hairy one. It wasn't the
Killian Dane.
There we go.
Thank you, whoever was yelling at your phone just then, while I stumble for another name again.
Yeah, I could. That actually makes a lot of sense. That would be.
And then you just get big beefy guys beating the hell out of each other.
Although that fleshes out our tag team division a little bit more too, mm-hmm, right? Like, especially if we're not going to get the belt onto Joe Coffey anytime soon here, and there's no reason to with Walter, then there really is no sense in Gallus being a trio, because as you and I have discussed since the beginning of this, what is their reason d'etre? Why are they doing anything? So now we move on to Nina Samuels versus Casey Owens. This is just a quick little squash, and then Nina Samuels cut a promo in the ring. I liked that promo. I thought that was fun.
Okay, you liked it more than I did. I'm not in on Nina Samuels just yet. I still think Ginny is a better heel.
Okay. I mean, I could go either way. I just thought that she did a good job with the promo. I don't know.
I mean, she, you know what? She's fine as a, you know, villain of the month until they decide who they really want to build up for Toni Storm. And Toni Storm isn't doing too much of late.
One of the problems is that the NXT UK universe, I think, is just a little bit too small.
Yeah, it's a little too small. The weekly television has made everybody kind of beat each other. So we've kind of seen
all these pairings, yeah, and because they spreed us with like 24 episodes in 12 weeks, they really exhausted a lot of these pairings.
Yeah, when they were doing the two a week stuff, it was a little ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, over 2 weeks, you'd sometimes see variations of very similar matches.
But I still like the idea of bringing people over from NXT to NXT UK.
Absolutely, and vice versa, to flesh things out, sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot, you know, Raul Vendoza, he could go over there and certainly just add some fresh pairings over on that. Riddick Moss in that new character, I think he could go over there and add some interesting persona. But first, I want to talk about the NXT UK Tag Team Champions, the Grizzly Young Veterans. versus Kenny Williams and Noam Dar. I thought that this match, for what it was, pretty good, pretty entertaining. I thought Noam Dar was sufficiently over, and I liked the way that the Grizzly Young Veterans eventually got the win.
I think Noam Dar would have been better served if this had been his debut for the week, as opposed to 205 Live. Him coming back in and getting the hometown pop, and then you bring him back on 205 next week.
Yeah.
But for us completists, I guess. I have fallen madly in love with James Gibson. Or James...
Drake? Zach Gibson or James Drake? There's
Zach Gibson.
You have to choose one. You can't merge them.
Oh, jeez. It's going to be that kind of week. Zach Gibson. I love the guy. I've turned from him being kind of an annoying tryhard to him being a really effective heel on the stick.
No, he most certainly is. Like, the whole put your shoes back on and just go home. What a great line.
Yes.
Oh, man.
I'm not all in on James Drake. That's who I'm not all in on, but
I still don't like the fact that they have a perfect circle knockoff for their theme song.
That's your thing. I don't know anything about that.
Have you never heard the Perfect Circle song, Judith?
Probably not.
Really? Did you just like miss rock radio around the year 2000?
Yes. To be honest, probably yes.
Okay. Maynard James Keenan had another band after Tool, Jeff. They're pretty good. I don't know.
I didn't listen to that much Tool either.
Well, Tool's pretty good too. They get a little overstated, and they create a whole cult of personality around Bill Hicks that I think has gone a bit run amok over the last 25 years. But good music. Love that band. Automa is very good.
I got old quick. I just decided to stop listening to new music in like 95 or something, I think.
Undertow and Automa are very good. I think Automa came out in 95. It's too bad. You should open up the last 6 months of 95. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it was more, I don't know.
Jeff, I'm not saying you had to buy Lateralis to the deluxe edition.
I started listening to CDs, and so it was just like all CDs of what I had already, so it was just like, eh. I'm not going to grow any, I don't think. I think some pop songs, and that's about it, because radio just wasn't popular with me at all in LA.
I'm not going to grow any. All right, let's get into NXT results.
I got Zeppelin I can listen to. I don't need to listen to Tool.
You could do... This is not mutually exclusive. You could enjoy both Zeppelin and Tool.
You could.
No, did you know that Tool does a cover of No Quarter that is actually quite good?
Oh, I think I've heard it. I didn't like it.
Oh. Well, everybody's a hater when you're Jeff Hawkins. Bianca Belair has a match against Mia Yim, Jeff.
Okay. I've made a cottage industry of hating things. You got to understand that, Chris. I just... Oh, that's cool. No, I hate it. I'm just gonna be contrarian on everything because that's just what I do.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. Bianca Belair had a match against Mia Yim. The physics of her using the rope for leverage don't quite add up as I'm staring at this picture one more time.
How did you feel about the cutting of promos mid-match? Because I'm torn on it. I think for them it's okay.
Yeah, for them it's okay. I don't think it's a convention.
Kind of pull it off.
Yeah, it's not a convention that would work normally. And I think if WWE takes this as a lesson to build off of, that would probably be a mistake.
Yeah, but they do that with a lot of people these days. So I find Mia Yim's run in NXT fascinating because they obviously think a lot of her. Putting her in various programs, flying her over to NXT UK to put people over. You know, they just don't... She's not going to be a star, so to speak.
And it's like not her time right now because you've got Baszler and Shafir and Duke, so...
And LaRae. Io Shirai, and yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's very much a case of we don't quite know what to do with Mia Yim. But at the same time, I could also see her being one of these people who ends up kind of getting fast-tracked onto the main roster all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like one week she's just no longer on NXT anymore, and she's now on SmackDown to spice things up, and she has a pretty decent run because she's still really fresh. Like she's
gonna
learning.
Be that Mickey, she's gonna be the Mickey James type on the roster. She's gonna be the mechanic in there, putting, you know, doing matches with Sonya Deville or Mandy Rose and putting them over, making them look good.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had Riddick Moss versus Raul Mendoza. Riddick Moss's new character is a combination of Super Macho Man from Super Punch-Out combined with a little bit of Rick the Model Martel. Like he
Hold on. Did you see the debut of this gimmick?
No.
It was about 1 or 2 months ago.
No.
It's a knockoff of...
There's a little bit of the Simon Diamond thing, too.
Yes. No, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's a Simon Diamond gimmick.
Right. Right. But it's like Simon Diamond plus like a fitness regime thing. And I mean, the dude looks a lot like, if you Google Super Macho Man from Super Punch-Out, he looks like the young version of Super Macho Man from Super Punch-Out, although I think in that game he's listed as like 35. Right down to the part where I actually wanted him to do Macho Man's like charge up and just super clothesline move on Raul Mendoza. He'd be perfect with that.
So you're saying he looks like a former male porn star Randy West?
I mean, I'm not super familiar with Randy West's work, but I'll take your word for it.
The Super Macho Man / I believe he was also called the Sandman in Mike Tyson's Punch-Out.
Oh, no, Sandman and Macho Man are two different characters in Punch-Out.
Oh, who am I thinking of?
No, yeah, Sandman's on Super Punch-Out as well. He's the world circuit boss.
See, now I gotta go.
I'm sorry, he's the major circuit boss.
I always remember
Super Punch-Out.
Piston Hurricane. And Bull.
Piston Honda is on...
Piston Honda.
He's on Punch-Out. Piston Hurricane shows up on Super Punch-Out. He's in the minor circuit.
Yeah, no. Piston Hurricane's in the arcade version, and Piston Honda's in the NES version, I believe.
Really? They had Hurricane?
Yeah, Super Macho Man in the... you're thinking the NES version of Super Macho Man.
I even see the Super Nintendo one. I mean, Rick Moss doesn't have the gray hair, but like they're.
Well, that's where I got the Randy West gimmick from. I am kind of done with Riddick Moss, to be honest with you. I was expecting him to go over here, and
I was too.
More than happy for Raul Mendoza to get a strong win. I fear him going 50-50. I hope that's not the case. Raul Mendoza has been really good for WWE ever since the Cruiserweight Classic, and they've done nothing with him again, probably because he's ethnic.
Super and underappreciated, though. Like, another company would go, wow, isn't it great that we have this very talented guy from Mexico who, like, actually speak to a demographic that we historically have not been great with. But WWE...
But you saw a clue to what they think of him on commentary when they said, you know, he's a luchador style, and I just went, oh, that's a kiss of death.
Yep, yep.
And I loved it. I thought Moss was going over. Riddick Moss, to me, look.
I like the gorilla press into the spine buster. That was a cool move.
He has power guy moves. He just doesn't have a lot of personality, and Tino Sabatelli was most of the personality in that tag team of theirs. And I'm just flummoxed as to, this is a guy that needs a mouthpiece for him.
Absolutely.
And he just needs to be a guy who beats people up as opposed to doing... There are two gimmicks of death in wrestling, in the WWE, that you'll find. The first is anything having to do with either fitness or being out of shape. The other one is imitating other wrestlers. If I'm Riddick Moss, I turn off my phone.
Ooh, you're worried he's going to get Bull Dempsey'd.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go with this character.
No, there sure isn't.
It gets the boo, this is lame kind of stuff, as opposed to, you know, what it would get normally.
What's really weird is the way that Moro was presenting it as Moss was coming down to the ring. It's, frankly, like, kind of empowering. This guy came up with the Riddick regimen when he had this injury because he wanted to get back, and this regimen that he came up with helped him get back faster.
Mm-hmm.
That's an inspiring story. It just is. Even if he's a dickhead, that's cool. That's a story about empowerment. That's a story about taking your life back from circumstances. That's a story about hard work. That's a story about self-confidence.
And now he's going to be a heel.
Right. Yeah, right. He's a heel. That's not admirable. You know what's admirable, Jeff? What's admirable is storming into somebody's locker room and spying on them while they're in the shower and putting Icy Hot into their underwear.
Well, that's what you do in the penitentiary. Yeah, that all jails are based on that kind of towel-snapping grab-assery.
Oh, God. They're going to be the Ozso soon enough here.
Oh, that popped me. I hadn't thought of that pun. That was great.
So next, we had Matt Riddle versus Adam Cole. And at least to me, this was a really, really interesting contrast in match approach for Matt Riddle versus the Velveteen Dream match. I thought that Matt Riddle was doing a really great job working as a babyface here and taking his style, which tends to be more submission-oriented, and switching more to cool-looking strikes, great-looking suplexes, firing up, and he was very babyface here, but still very much within that MMA style. I thought this was pretty solid for Matt Riddle.
I was more amazed at how underwhelmed the crowd seemed to be at this match.
I think they were waiting for a shoe to drop, no pun intended, with Matt Riddle.
Yeah, to me, it's one of those things where if it's in front of, say, an NXT live crowd, that this crowd is going nuts for it. It felt kind of, I won't say dead, because there was plenty of great audience interaction in it. It just felt like it underwhelmed a bit to the crowd, and I didn't understand why.
And my only diagnosis is the anticipation.
Maybe it went on last or the tapings or
something. That could also be it, too. And you're also wondering, okay, how's Roddy going to be involved in this match? Or how is this match going to play into that grander
people
undisputed?
People are anticipating the run-in.
Right, absolutely. I think that was what was saying the tone here. So what you knew you weren't getting was the Matt Riddle versus Adam Cole takeover match. And, you know, takeovers tend to be a little bit of a blessing and a curse. And they're a blessing, obviously, because they are wonderful fruitions to well-thought-out storylines that have beginnings, middles, and ends, and they're the ends to chapters, and they're great. But the curse of them is that we also know that, like, that's where the chapter end is. So we know better than to just sort of assume that Adam Cole versus Matt Riddle is something they're just going to give us away on television.
Yeah, I like the match, though.
What do you think of the angle at the end?
I think they're going so hard that it's become a red herring.
Yeah, the beef between Roddy and Adam Cole feels not real. It feels contrived.
Although it also feels like they're going to do the schism where it's going to be Roddy and Bobby Fish breaking off, and Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole having their own thing.
That's interesting. That's interesting. I definitely saw the way Bobby was looking at Roddy, and I thought that was interesting.
But it also feels like they're going to do that. They're going to put those two teams to get against each other with like a third team, and then it's going to be like a dusty beatdown.
Oh, that's funny.
Because they're going too hard on the breakup angle. That's the weird thing. It's like, week after week after week, it becomes...
Well,
Roddy
didn't do anything wrong here this week, and it seems like almost impossible that Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish, as the eyewitnesses, couldn't explain to Adam Cole, hey, man, Roddy didn't do anything. And then it seemed weird when they were, like, looking at Roddy, like, man, what are you doing? What were you doing out here? And it's like, he was trying to help, and all he did was help.
The emotions don't fit the
actions. Absolutely. The plot points and the plot notes and the match notes themselves. Like, what would have made a lot of sense here is when Roddy is picking up Adam Cole, and this is what I thought we were going to get, one of the two of them gets out of the way and, like, leaves the other one to take the beating. You know what I'm saying? And then there's, like, this question of, like, oh, was that a deliberative action? Or was that just instinctual? And that creates tension between Roddy and Adam Cole. That wasn't what happened, though.
Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of the... I like the slow burn telegraphing of a breakup. Like, when Luger was brought in for the Horsemen, and then Tully just makes an offhanded remark about Ole's snot-nosed kid. And you know that's the moment that's going to ignite this. And then it becomes, you know, and then it just kind of grows from there, as opposed to, you know, they almost come to blows one week and they almost come to blows the next week. And then eventually they come to blows and then they say, oh, it was all a trick or whatever. I'm interested in this. I still think it's too soon to break them up.
I agree.
I mean, I think they need to be brought up as a unit onto whatever show they get brought into. I have a sneaking suspicion it's going to be 205 Live. But I think they work better as a unit right now, as individual parts with individual personalities within that unit, much like a great stable should be. But my main problem with it was the actions didn't fit the or the emotions didn't fit the actions.
One last plot point this week from NXT US was the fact that the Viking Raiders were beaten down by the Forgotten Sons backstage, and then the Forgotten Sons drove off in their Silverado.
I found this kind of cool.
It was okay.
I liked the beatdown. This is what the Forgotten Sons should be doing to everybody.
Yes. It's okay. If they had been doing this a lot, like if they had kind of had an MO of ambushing people backstage for the last several months, that really would have been all they needed in terms of characterization.
They should be a biker gang that acts like a biker gang outside of the ring. And in doing so, they're going to take advantage of people backstage or walking around on their own.
Because they feel like they've been forgotten. They feel like they've been wronged by society.
I was just going to say, because they're a gang, Chris.
Yeah, and they're a gang. But this whole thing of them having a chip on their shoulders, why are they doing all these things they don't have justification for? What's their heel logic? Their heel logic is that this way people will remember us, Jeff.
Okay. I'll go with that.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, it's at least a step in the right direction. I'm willing to go with that. See, like, here's the thing, Jeff. I was able to watch 3 hours and not feel like dumber for having watched these 3 hours, even though these were not the greatest episodes of 205 Live NXT UK or NXT US.
Well, wait until the wild cards go there, and then we're just stuck with.
You had to say wild card. You had to say it.
Joseph Connor coming to NXT.
If I never hear the word wild card or the phrase wild card ever again, oh man, it'd be good.
Well, that will do it for this episode, I believe. We also had a Patreon episode drop this week. Chris and I did a live watch of Starrcade 1992 Battle Bowl. You can follow me at CrapGame13. You can follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. You can follow Chris at Chris Novembrino.
Also, Don't Worry has a new episode out, so go on to iTunes, go on to Stitcher, and subscribe to Don't Worry About the Government. Follow us at DWATG. Don'tWorry.tv is our homepage. All the Family has a new episode out, too, so go and check that out. We're now on to Season 3, which is real fun. 1972 is the year in question now, so go and check that out at AllInTheFamilyPodcast.com.
Here it comes again, lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations, limited time only, plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.